You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hello, hello, welcome back to another episode. Glad to have you with us. And I'm also glad today to have with me Michael Jeffrey. Now, Michael is an ex-Royal Navy veteran who until recently was a mature student at the University of Northumbria, where he recently graduated with a first-class honours degree in business and supply chain management. Pretty impressive stuff. He's also the founder of a new business called Trade Assist, which aims at helping tradesmen and tradeswomen to successfully run their businesses in the new digital era. Now, in his spare time, he is a keen mental health spokesman and a volunteer working with military charities to create a stigma-free mental health environment. Very worthwhile stuff that he does there. That's my guest today, Michael. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Keith. Very excited for this.
Cool. It's my absolute pleasure to have you here. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Now, I mean, I guess that the first thing that springs to mind is you used to be in the Royal Navy, so you're an ex-Royal Navy vet, yeah?
That's correct, yeah. 10 years I've been in the end.
10 years. My goodness. Goodness. Now, the whole theme of the podcast is all around fear and so on. So I'm guessing for a lot of people, and mine too, I guess, the perception is if you've been in the Royal Navy, so I'm assuming fear doesn't mean anything to you. You have no fears. How accurate is that perception?
Do you know, it has been said to me in various forms over the years. But of course, for me, I think that you go through your life with fear around the corner in every obstacle or every thing that you face, if you know what I mean. So there's no such thing as not being scared or not being frightened of something. Certainly there has been times in my life where I've had fear come up, and luckily through my experience and the journey that we discussed today, I've managed to build up some tools that allow me to deal with that adequately, you know. So I'm probably less likely to be feared of massive situations, but more likely to be fearful of something like your exam or filling out a large book of paperwork or something. So that's rather interesting, yeah, which you probably wouldn't get for, you know, someone who's done a decade in forces or being an university student.
Interesting. So it's not a case that you have no fear, it's just you have different ways of handling fear.
Yeah, that's it. Like, if we look all the way back to when I was a teenager, for instance, I remember at the age of 15 years old, I got permission off my parents to join the YMCA. I was a volunteer fitness instructor at the YMCA, and they were running a cross charity sort of South Africa. They would come and live in the UK, and we would go live in South Africa for 3 weeks, you know, whatever that's called. And I go and ask for permission from my parents to go and do that. So I went away for 3 weeks with relative strangers, and I lived in some South African's house for 3 weeks while I immersed myself in their culture. So from an early age, I've always had the ability to sort of deal with fear. And that obviously then went on to when I joined the Navy, etc., you know, when we talk about that in a few minutes.
Gotcha. All right. So, well, hey, let's talk about it now. So what was it like sort of leaving home as a teenager and joining the military? I mean, I can only think back to how I was when I was a teenager, and something like that sounds, well, I'd say, pretty daunting, pretty scary. How was it for you, and how did you handle it?
Yeah, I always remember the day that I decided to sign up. Now, I've always wanted to join the Navy as a young boy. So my granddad used to work in the dockyards, which we had, which were prolific in the northeast. So I remember going down and holding his hand as he's taking me down the bridge and seeing these big grey vessels. So I was always besotted with the Royal Navy or the Merchant Navy or going to sea. I'm also from a fishing town, so I've always been involved in some sort of seafaring activity. But I went one day straight up the careers advisor when I was 18 years old, so I could make my own decisions. And I signed up, I went through all the tests, and I didn't tell anyone, not even my parents, until I got the letter through saying that I'd been accepted. So, and I had a start date. So the start date, I think, at that point was around about 6 weeks away. So it was really, you know, in 6 weeks' time, I was leaving for however long it was. So when I talked to my mum and my dad, they were, well, my dad was like, oh, yeah, okay, you know, a typical dad answer. My mum was like, no, we're not having this. But for me, I'd done this, but it's something I'd always wanted to do. And if we think about this in terms of fear, I was apprehensive to leave home, to leave my comfort blanket, to leave my friends. But I knew it's something that I'd always wanted to do. And then in that instance for me, the ambition or the want or the need to do something outweighed the fear in that instance. You know, I didn't quite know what I was getting myself into, so going into it a little bit blind kind of helps. But as I mentioned earlier on, when I went and did the exchange in South Africa for 3 weeks, it kind of tells you that I've got that type of personality anyway. You know, I think there's got to be a certain type of personality from anyone who's joining the forces. You've got to be able to deal with being away from home is a minimum, I would say. So I overcame that by a mixture of blind luck and a desire to be in the forces. But I do remember the day, 18-year-old, on the platform at Newcastle, the 10th of October 2005, at about 20 past 2 in the afternoon. And we got the train down, and it was funny because on that train there was other recruits who were going down on the same train, and you could see all the families, like the mothers crying, the dads pretending they don't really care, but they did, you know, young siblings, cousins, whatever it was. And that's the first time I ever felt like a brotherhood, if you like, or the forces umbrella, you know. Because when we got on the train, we moved the seats that we were allocated and sat next to each other, and I started to get to know each other. And I'm still friends to this day with one guy, Chris, who I met at that train station, who lives not far from me. That sort of helped as well on the journey, going, now you already have a friend there, you know, from the same area. So,
yeah.
But I do remember that time. So, yeah.
Okay, so from what you're saying, the leaving home to join the Navy, one of the fears there that many people would have in that situation is the being away from home. You were already slightly ahead of that because you'd had that exchange student program a couple of years earlier. So already you're kind of building on previous experiences and using those to help you face the next set of challenges, is that? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that's pretty much an accurate way to say it.
Got it. That kind of makes sense. That kind of makes sense. And I like the fact that...
I do want to say, you know, I did mention there that it takes a certain type of person to go away and join the forces. But there may be some of your listeners who went off and travelled the world after, you know, after university or something. They could have done that when they were young. And then they would have had the same sort of thought. So my trail of thought with this and overcoming that fear is that, yeah, you don't know what you're going into, but your need, want, or desire to go and experience something new overrules the initial fear that you have. You know, that's certainly something that I feel.
Yeah. Nice. So you've got the fear, but the thing you want to do is bigger than the fear, as it were, and that's kind of what helps you find a way through it. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, and I think that allows a lot of people, moving countries, mm-hmm. traveling the world, joining cruise ships, entertainers going away. You know, there's a lot of stuff. They need and want to do that. I think initially helps you overcome that fear, or at least gives you that stepping stone or the courage to start taking the steps forward. Certainly just for me anyway, and some of your listeners might resonate with that.
Yeah, right. So I guess it's about finding that getting back in touch with the reason why you're doing this thing in the first place, and using that, reminding yourself of why you set out on the journey, and using that to somehow find the inner strength to be able to face the fears that you're encountering along the way.
Yeah, cool. Exactly that.
Slight diversion, or a quick question, slight diversion question here. For you, how do you describe fear, define fear? What would you say fear is?
Do you know, to me, it is something that is fear's created by you. I firmly believe that it's created internally. So I would say it's all about what might happen as opposed to what will happen. So as an example, I'd love to go to university, but I might not be able to deal with the exam stress. Well, you know, that how do you know? That's the only logical question to that, I think, is that. And so therefore, putting that into perspective, you know, unless you try something, you're not going to know what it's like. It's not, and obviously there is the inherent fear that, you know, if there's a mad knife man in front of us, then that's a different type of fear than going to university. But, you know, I do think that a lot of people hold back on their dreams and ambition because what might happen, rather than giving it a shot because it could work.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. So we're not scared of what is happening. We're scared of what the things we imagine might happen, and so often turn out never to happen in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a lot of things. I've seen it a lot with people in business. That they're afraid to do or run a certain campaign or do a certain thing with their business or scale up because of what might happen. Now, we're pre-programmed to look at every possible worst outcome, but that's 99% not going to happen. So why do we limit ourselves with that?
And, exactly.
And I do think that with the experience that I've got over the last sort of 15, 20 years of my life, I've put things in place to reduce them sort of thoughts with me, you know, which has allowed me to go through courses, go through university, start business, and get out there in life and try and push forward, you know?
Yeah. Now, I know from speaking to you before we came on air, there's so many areas you've gone through where you've encountered new fears after new fears. We could talk about this for hours. We've only got a short time, so we'll have to kind of be a bit brief about it. But I mean, you got the fears around leaving home as a teenager and joining the military. The fears with your first deployment on a ship, that opens up a whole new load of fears. I understand you served time in Iraq. That must have again brought about its own set of fears around there. Promotion, you were saying you were promoted and there were fears around that. Then also leaving the military. Now, that was an interesting one. You mentioned that was also a big source of fear. What's kind of going on there? Because you've gone from being on a ship and being deployed in war zones to leaving the military and becoming a civilian again. Where does the fear come in that?
I think to understand that level of fear, I've got to take you back just slightly. So when you go through basic training in any of the armed forces, they instill a certain type of discipline, certain type of courage, and a commitment to the armed forces within you. So going through that, and as you mentioned, you know, my first ship, I served on 5 ships in total, so I had to go and meet a whole crew of people every time I joined that. Not just that, when I went to a shore establishment, I'd be around new people as well. We all had something in common, which was the Royal Navy, so it makes things easier. but the first phase are still there. Then you mentioned Iraq, and then I also went down to Falklands, which are completely different. Obviously, we're not in a war in Falklands, but we were in Iraq. All I had there was the pre-deployment type of phase. So am I in the best shape possible to go and deliver the job that I need to do out there? And then whilst I'm doing all of this, I'm under the forces umbrella. So ultimately, they're going to always look after me. So if I need anything, like dental, medical, they've got me. They feed me, they clothe me, they put me under a house. I don't have anything to worry about at all when I'm in the forces. And one of the things that I talk about quite a lot with veterans and people leaving the forces through SAFA, the Armed Forces Charity, and this goes from legacy. So people who've left in the 80s right up until present day, and this is a personal opinion, but the armed forces are not the best at dealing with people leaving the umbrella, as I call it, because, you know, they have got some quite good resettlement programs in place, but there tends to be more focused around getting a job and not dealing with the fact that you're pulling the rug from under their feet, so to speak. You know, that security blanket is gone when you leave. So in the back of your head, you've always got that fear that what if I can't reintegrate into society properly? And we're seeing it. The facts are there. You know, I haven't got any to hand, but there's a large homeless sort of population of ex-armed forces, which is a sad case. A lot of mental health issues, which I know we'll talk about a little bit later on. And this, I think, one of the major causes, because it's not dealt with properly when leaving. So for me, when I left, my fear was, where am I going to live? How am I going to support myself? Then you're also recovering from a pace of operations. So even on your downtime, you're still there Monday to Friday, you're still doing things 9 to 5, you're still managing a team of 100 people. In my case. So you go from doing all that one day and literally doing nothing the next day.
Yeah.
You get your ID card taken away from you and your identity is stripped. You become from serving number to X or forces. So, you know, the fear, that's where it all lies. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense there, because you are going into a completely different way of life. So again, you've got all those unknowns, plus all those things that you took for granted, now you've suddenly got to sort for yourself. That makes a lot of sense. Now, you mentioned there that you do work with the Armed Forces charities, particularly around mental health and so on, and we'll finish off with that. But just before we reach there, you've mentioned a couple of times that you've developed a few techniques, a few things that you use to help yourself get over fears and conquer fears and so on. Can you briefly sort of share some of those with us? What are some steps that we can take?
Yeah, I know I briefly alluded to it before, but I firmly believe that fear, unless it's something that is really going to cause you harm, fear is created within. And so what I look at now is, I look at both sides of the story. So I look at what can happen. So what will happen in the worst sense, what will happen in the best sense? And then it's rationalising those fears. So if I take my journey into university, the very first time I went to my first lecture, I thought, I'm going to be the oldest in the room. I'm not going to be as current on, you know, mathematics, English. I'm not going to be up to standard. People are going to know more than me because I just came from A-levels, you know, all them sort of fears, which would have put me off applying in the first place had I not rationalised those fears and then decided to just go ahead and do it anyway, then I wouldn't have been where I am now. So as it turned out, I was the oldest in the room, but I was also the wisest and therefore was looked up to a little bit more. Right. So, you know, them fears were replaced very quickly with me seeing the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying with that? So because I rationalised and then just decided to do it anyway, I was then proved right in that decision by replacing them fears with actual, you know, with sort of compliments, I suppose. So it's a case of just do it.
Just do it.
As long as it's not going to cause you any major harm, there's no harm in doing it. So if it's going to, if you're going to invest £100,000 in something, then you've got to really carefully think about it. But if you don't have to, no, just do it. What's the worst that's going to happen?
Yeah.
That's the kind of mentality that I kind of go with now. It doesn't always pay out, but then I get the experience of that. So you never really lose, do you?
Yeah.
You know,
that's a very fair point, yeah.
Yeah, you gain experience or you gain what you wanted to achieve in the first place.
So do you think it helps sort of acknowledging that you have those fears and kind of just almost sitting down with the fears and to anthropomorphize them, almost basically having a chat so you get become fully aware of what those fears are so that now you know what they are, you can then go on to deal with things rather than just sort of trying to pretend the fear isn't there and ignoring it?
Yeah, exactly. You just said it there. I've seen it before where people go, oh, I'm not going to think about that because I don't know, you know, I don't want to think about what could happen. Mm-hmm. Whereas I would say to them, well, if you do think about what happens and then you rationalise it and then you see it for what it is, you can then almost turn that fear into something else, you know, into a positive, you know, or become more informed in what you want to do rather than let it rule you, you know. You've got to take control of these things, otherwise they then lead on to mental health issues and stuff. And I've learned these lessons, but, you know, I've still suffered with mental health issues, you know. Are we all right to talk about that now?
Yeah, go for it. I mean, we're kind of coming to the end of our time, so yeah, let's dive into this.
When I left the forces, I did suffer with anxiety. I did suffer, which formed into panic attacks and depression and things like that. And it's because of the reasons that I discussed before. So going through and working with professionals and dealing with it head on allowed me to sort of overcome these issues. And a lot of this is CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. Seeing things for what it is, being present in the moment, not letting fear overtake all of your emotions, which, you know, a panic attack is. And all of these things, you know, very briefly, are what allows you to rationalize fear, put it back into its box, and then you take control of that box rather than it controlling you. Again, that's very brief, but that's, you know, that's the kind of things. I'm very open with mental health.
Yeah.
It needs to talk about more, especially as men.
Absolutely,
men are very good at hiding things. And unfortunately, the stats are showing that I think it's something like most deaths a year or suicides are by men under 42, and it's because of mental health issues. So this is why I'm a firm advocate of mental health, especially in the veterans and the armed forces community.
Yeah, and that's increasing where you're focusing some incredibly important work with. And people who want to find out more, you can find out Michael's contact details. He's across social media. You'll find out all the details on the show website, keithblakemorenoble.com/show. Look for Michael's show and you'll find all of his contact details there. If you could sit down with the minister in charge of all of the armed forces, and if you could persuade him to take, or her, depending on when it is, if you could persuade them to implement one single policy to help with the mental health of ex-military vets, what would that be? What do you think is the one thing which they should do which would really help?
It's funny you mentioned ex-veterans, but actually I would want this to start in service. And I would want it to start at the recruit phase. I want mental health to be talked about from the day you walk in there, all the way through, every rank, every person, male, female, who work with the forces or in the forces, they all need to be aware that the stress, the pace of operations, the pace of life takes a toll, not just on them, but the families of the armed forces community as well. You know, let's not forget them. That's where I would want it to start. But to try and limit this sort of the impact that it's having, There needs to be investment. There needs to be. Yeah. You've got a lot of investment from charities to help heroes of physical injuries, mm-hmm. but not so much for mental health. And unfortunately, it's kind of gone. It's gone by unseen. Now the forces have got better at doing it. The local communities have got better with the armed forces covenant, but it's still not there. It's still not perfect. If it could ever be perfect, you know.
Sure. But I love, absolutely love what you say there, that it doesn't start with the vets. It starts at the recruitment stage and instilling it right from that stage and working all the way through one's career, military career, so that by the time one becomes a vet, you've got the stuff in place anyway, because it's been in place all the way through. I like that, and I think you're right, that is an essential way of doing things. Brilliant. Well, Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. I know we could have talked for so much longer on this. Perhaps we will revisit parts of this in another episode. But for the meantime, thank you so much for taking your time out, Michael. Good luck with everything you're doing, particularly with the work that you're doing with the military vets. And as I mentioned, if you want to find out more information about who Michael is, about what he does, just pop onto the website for the show, keithblakemorenoble.com/show. Look for Michael's episode. You'll find his contact details, all his social media stuff there. You can get involved as well and help to overcome the stigma around mental health and to really make a difference in these people's lives. That really is it for this episode. We have run out of time. Thank you for joining me. Thank you to my guest, Michael, for taking time out of his day to join us. I hope to catch you next time. And I will leave you with Michael's favourite quote. It's a beautiful quote. Life isn't about waiting for the storm to pass. It's about learning to dance in the rain.
Been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show, helping you transform your deepest fears into your greatest strengths. To find out more, please visit keithblakemorenoble.com.